Hello, here comes another edition of Talking Fußball, the Bundesliga show, your source for all things German football. I'm your host, Matt Herman. This week, you know, we're stepping away from our laser-like focus on the title race. We're leading with other topics. Terry DeFallon has, in fact, stepped away to France for the weekend. So it's just me and Nick Wildhagen on the mic. It's great to have you back, my man.
Yes, finally back. I'm not being kept by work or anything else. So yeah, it's great to be back with you. But, you know, I'm sad to hear that once I decided to come back, Terry DeFallon felt the need to have a bit of a dirty weekend in France.
Oh, you know, I mean, when is it a bad time for a dirty weekend in France?
True. I mean, look at that pastries. You can just buy those and then, you know, lock yourself in a hotel room and have fun for like multiple hours.
Oh, man. Sometimes things just take a turn when Nick Wildhagen is on the show. I love it. We're going to be back to talk a lot of, you know, pastry stuff. No, we'll talk foosball. We're going to be talking foosball. You can get in touch with us anytime, you know, send us an email, podcast@talkingfoosball.com. We also love good reviews on whatever podcast platform offers you the option of leaving us a review. If you want to really help us a lot, please just support us on Patreon. We get lots of timeless content over there. It'll take you through all six decades of Bundesliga history for just, you know, a few bucks a month. Okie doke, here comes part one of Talking Fußball, the part where we talk about whatever we feel is the sort of big story of the week, the big result of the week. Like I said at the very top, it feels to me like it's an opportunity for us to not necessarily be so obsessive about the title race. I mean, we are so scarred, Nick, from this last decade plus of title race drought that I feel like it was very easy for us to talk about it every single time out because it just felt so novel, so unusual. Now we might be in a situation where things, dare I even say it, are settled at this point. Not settled as in the book is shut and it's a done deal, but I feel like we now maybe need to not talk about it for a while. Maybe we should talk about the Rhine Derby instead. That's a cool game.
It's a massive game. I mean, it's the sort of game that has the city of Cologne buzzing for weeks and weeks and weeks, and same in Gladbach. It's one of those classical derbies of two greats of German football. Obviously, two teams with loads of history. Both teams have actually won the Bundesliga. Gladbach, biggest team in the 70s besides Bayern, and Cologne obviously won a German championship back then as well. And, you know, both teams have at certain points fallen on hard times. But whenever this derby rolls around, I mean, they sometimes, just even if they're not in form, and even if things look dire, they manage to produce scintillating stuff. And this time around was no different because, I mean, goals came flying in.
Yeah, six goals went flying in.
Robin Hack suddenly scores a brace. I mean, who would have thought that we would see the day where that happens?
He was close to a hat-trick.
I mean, you were sort of like thinking, hang on, the guy who got relegated with Arminia Bielefeld from the Bundesliga 2 suddenly is scoring a hat-trick? How did that happen? So, yes, absolutely brilliant stuff. It sort of highlighted that both teams have actually a lot on offer on a good day.
Yeah, it was a bit strange. I mean, it was certainly, in terms of like the thrills were there. Six goals, 3-3 draw, good stuff. You know, went back and forth, Cologne taking an early lead. You know, Gladbach drawing level, Cologne going up again, then Gladbach scoring two, getting their own lead, Cologne scoring late to tie it up. But I do also feel, as you say, like both of these teams are kind of underselling themselves in a way. Nobody's really happy with this result. I mean, obviously both sets of fans are happy in that they're not going to be razzed mercilessly by whoever would have won this game in the region. But, you know, both of these teams are in a pretty bad run, all things considered. I mean, Cologne have one win in 12, and Gladbach have one win in 8. Talk me out of thinking it's a worrying time for both of these teams.
I mean, I said at the start of the season that I think that the Gladbach squad is too unevenly balanced. You know, I actually tipped them for relegation playoff spot. Obviously, I don't think anymore that they'll end up there. But this season has kind of shown why my thinking maybe wasn't that far off in terms of the actual results that Gladbach have produced. I mean, going forward, they do have exciting players. I think that Rocco Reitz, for instance, has been one of the discoveries of the season. Absolutely brilliant player. I cursed his name several times when he scored a brace against Bremen, actually. But yeah, you know, the whole balance of the team is sort of off. So we saw that in this match. I mean, if you concede three goals against Köln, I don't think a lot of teams have done this so far this season, if I'm being honest. So that is not a good thing. On the other hand side, I mean, they've managed to produce three goals. So, too unevenly balanced. They will struggle against lesser opponents, but I think they'll be fine in the end. But again, Roland Wirkes has got an awful lot to do on the transfer market next summer. Sort of like another transitional season, and boy, Gladbach have had many transitional seasons now. I mean, they were once a steady sort of Champions League, Europa League side. They're not anymore, and they're sort of having a hard time finding their way. Köln, on the other hand side, I mean, if you're sort of a glass half full instead of half empty sort of guy, you would highlight the fact that they've taken 7-8 points since the restart of the season, which is a good thing. I mean, they've stopped losing as many matches as they were losing under Baumgart. They're not seeing performances like they were under Baumgart towards the end there, like that loss to Union Berlin, which was absolutely dreadful. I mean, no team spirit. I mean, it's a very spirited Cologne side, but at the end of the day, results like those are not going to help them overcome that gap of, you know, 7-8 points that they have up to Bochum and Wolfsburg and other sides. So they're sort of stuck there in the bottom three. And the best they can hope for is the relegation playoff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think the gap between, you know, Cologne and that, you know, between the relegation playoff, which is where they are right now, 18 points, and then 25 points, which is the team ahead of them, Bochum. I don't trust Cologne to make up that gap, barring, you know, some kind of serious collapse from Cologne. I wanted to go back to something you just mentioned, or at least mentioned a moment ago, that, you know, giving up three goals to Cologne, that not many teams have done that this year. The research is in, Nick. Exactly one team has done that, and they've done it twice. That is Borussia Mönchengladbach, a 3-3 draw and a 3-1 loss earlier in the season.
Oh, there you go.
Which it shouldn't surprise us all that thoroughly, considering just by number of goals conceded. I mean, Gladbach do have the third worst defense in the division. I mean, only Bochum and Darmstadt have conceded more goals than they have. And, you know, Cologne, 6 of their 19 goals on the season, the worst attack in the league, have come against Borussia Mönchengladbach.
It's sort of like the Bundesliga version of Osnabrück, who've taken like 6 of 18 points against HSV.
Yes, I remember you mentioning that on the last Aufstieg. You know, you mentioned Roland Fiakos, the sporting director of Mönchengladbach, and how much work he has ahead of him. I mean, one of his big quotes coming out of this derby was saying that, you know, it looked to me like we had the sort of the more skilled, the better functioning team, but we keep making stupid mistakes at the back to sort of ruin all of our hard work. I mean, obviously, quotes like that are meant to sort of do more than one thing. It's meant to sort of maybe offer an explanation, but also to, you know, change a narrative either in the press or, you know, signal something to his squad that he has faith in them, that they just need to clean up a few things, that they're not hopeless. I wonder if you feel like that's a fair characterization of where they're at. If that is the case, where do they go from here? I mean, 49 goals at this stage of the season is quite a lot.
I mean, the fact that they've conceded like 3 goals against Köln in both matches they've played against them, and they conceded quite a lot against Darmstadt in the Hinrunde as well. I think Darmstadt at one point led 3-0 and was like a 3-3 draw at the end there, one of the first matches where Darmstadt actually took points. It just shows you that this problem is not just something new that has popped up. It has followed them all season long, and they really haven't sorted it out. They haven't done anything on the winter transfer market to address it in any sort of significant way. And I mean, I wasn't the only one who looked at Gladbach's squad at the start of the season thinking, well, hang on, that defense doesn't really look well balanced and it might have an issue in terms of the sort of player material that is at hand there. So it's not really rocket science that they are struggling in defense. If it's just one silly mistake or two silly mistakes in a match, sure, yes, you know, you sort of brush it off and you move on to the next match and you try to do better. But what this season has really shown is that Gladbach aren't able to do any better than that. And that is not something that they can sort of sort out in 2 weeks' time. there are no quick fixes there. I mean, they have to allow some of the younger guys to develop, like Joe Scally. And at the other hand side, they have to think, well, is a player like Itakura, is he good enough for the Bundesliga? Should we maybe replace him with somebody else come next summer? So it's sort of like a mix of things. And, well, alas, all of it takes time, really.
Yep. And, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious to anybody who follows the Bundesliga closely that these are two teams that are pretty central, as you mentioned earlier in the intro to this segment. These are really two teams who have a lot of history and a lot of sort of fan following. And when these teams are both in the Bundesliga, yeah, that's your first step. I think we're doing well there. But when these two teams are both doing well, it just adds so much more spice to the league. And I hope things don't continue in the direction they have been for the last couple of years with these two clubs. We're missing enough big clubs as it is.
Cologne have another transfer window to go without being able to sign players. So that is another thing. I mean, even if they stay in the league, it's going to be another hard season coming up for them.
All right, let's move away from the Rhein Derby. Let's talk a little bit about the 8-goal Rekordmeister, Bayern. Why not? We spent a whole 10, 12 minutes not talking about Bayern or Leverkusen, and it's time. It's time again. An 8-1 result at home to Mainz. Ridiculous stuff. Bayern were coming off a 3-0 result at home to Lazio at midweek. That sort of, you know, saw them through into the last eight of the Champions League and also saved them, saved us, saved everyone a fresh avalanche of Bayern in crisis storylines. Probably saved Thomas Tuchel a job for the remainder of the season. How'd you see this one against Mainz? I mean, I think probably the big story in terms of big names and a lot of the sort of reaction following the game was the fact that Leon Goretzka and Joshua Kimmich were both back in the starting lineup, both, you know, played well, which has not always been the case on both counts this season. What do you think that this big thundering result means in the grand scheme of things?
Probably just a sigh of relief for another week. I mean, it means some peace and quiet. I mean, the media sort of has asked Tuchel their questions about, well, what about your future now then? What about your future now then, Thomas? And he sort of answers them in a sort of...
In his normal, ever so friendly way?
Yes. I mean, if you ever move to Munich, you hope that your next door neighbor is going to be Thomas Tuchel, aren't you?
Well, I think as long as you're not a television journalist, you'd probably be an all right guy.
I don't know. Do you want to, like, you know, discuss house rules with Thomas Tuchel? Probably not. No, but I mean, it just means that there's a little bit more peace and quiet. And what Bayern actually have done is that they've shown their full potential against a lesser opponent in one match. End of. Harry Kane puts another 3 goals past another keeper in the Bundesliga. He keeps scoring, he keeps scoring. And, you know, the funny thing is that as things stand, he is still going to have that Spurs moniker over him, like, you know, Mr. No Titles. They're out of the DFB Pokal. It's not looking good in the Bundesliga. And, well, they managed to stay in the Champions League. And now, I mean, the Champions League staying in it was actually important in a sense because, I mean, there were rumors going around that if they'd lost against Lazio, Thomas Tuchel would have been out of a job. And the name Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was mentioned?
Yeah, that was a real interesting choice in terms of rumors. It felt very much like, ooh, who could we get in that has a reasonably big name, you know, reasonably, and wouldn't mind working for only 10 games? Okay, yeah, that maybe that works.
Like the former Cardiff guy, yes.
Exactly, exactly. Or what is Stabæk? What was the team he coached?
Molde. Stabæk, okay. Stabæk was Bob Bradley.
Oh, I knew that, but I thought Solskjaer had a spell at Stabæk as well.
I mean, for Solskjaer, it probably would have been, yes, 10 matches, and he wouldn't have made any sort of fuss about, you know, the fact that he would have been gone afterwards, and they would have gone for a bigger name than him, because obviously... Solskjaer's bit of damaged good after his stint at United, which really didn't end happily, but all things considered, when you see what has happened since he's left and what Erik ten Hag is currently trying to accomplish with that team and not managing to do that, sort of a different spin on that stint of his there.
It does. I mean, it turns out that trying to put out a trash fire is very difficult, even for very accomplished fighters of fires. No, I think it would have made for some pretty fun press narratives, at least for a short time. I was actually just recently watching the Beckham documentary series on Netflix.
Oh, 99 came up?
Yeah, you know, only for about a, you know, 12-minute sequence at the end of episode two. But it, yeah, considering his personal history with Bayern München, I think it would have been a bit of a tickle to have him in charge for even a handful of games.
It would have been, absolutely. And, you know, I mean, Norwegian managers in Germany, I mean, there's a bit of a history there. Jørn Andersen had Mainz.
Yep. He golfed his way out of the job.
Fired before the first match day of the Bundesliga after a loss in the cup against Lübeck. Ståle Solbakken at Köln. Greatest press conference in German football history besides Trapattoni. Hands down. I mean, what else could have come out of the next Norwegian manager? I mean, thinking about that, I'm sort of like thinking, oh, why didn't it happen? I mean, it should have happened. It would have been fun.
Okay, you mentioned the sort of struggles of Harry Kane specifically to win a title, period, considering the club he's played most of his career at. It's one of those things that happens to everybody who plays for Spurs most of their career. There is still a chance, I would say. There is still a decent chance for Bayern in the Champions League. Are you convinced that, you know, in this sort of knockout tournament format, that Bayern have the type of side to make that happen? I mean, I don't think anybody would necessarily say they're on the level of your, you know, your Manchester Cities or some of the other, you know, Inter is doing quite well in the league right now.
I'm sort of in mind that Manchester City is probably going to be defending their title.
Sure.
Short of that, I think that Inter looks very, very good. I mean, one of the good things is the fact that Real Madrid don't seem to be as strong as they've been in years prior.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Leipzig showed that in their tie against Real at the Bernabeu. I mean, the Real really, really, really struggled. And I mean, they should have been down to 10 men there, hands down.
Oh, yeah. And Leipzig probably should have won that game.
Absolutely. They had the better chances. And yeah. So Real Madrid, not as strong. PSG, not as strong. I mean, Luis Enrique is sort of planning for a Mbappe-free future, and it's not really going well. So, I mean, all things considered, with those two sides sort of being beatable, yeah, I mean, you can make it to the semi-finals. Why can't you make it to the finals? But at the end of the day, I think that either Inter or Manchester City is going to be too big a hurdle, if I'm being honest. Especially if you get to a final, it's just one match. A coach can, you know, really hit it out of the park if he chooses the right tactics and makes some of the right moves and, you know, even surprise a guy like Pep Guardiola.
I see over my shoulder, as it's been running throughout our podcast recording, that Bayer Leverkusen were able to sew up a result against Wolfsburg. They were at home to Wolfsburg. They finished that game up 2-0. I mean, Wolfsburg were down to 10 men for the vast majority of this game. A bit of a dip at midweek for Bayer Leverkusen over in Azerbaijan, though they did, of course, dig themselves out of a 2-0 hole there. How are you liking Leverkusen to sort of stay in cruise control and just take this one home?
I mean, it was a very convincing performance. Wolfsburg were never close, really, to, you know, putting Bayern into any sort of danger. Red card obviously helped. I mean, it's sort of starting to show a bit of tear at the Bayer Arena because, I mean, they're still in all three competitions and it's starting to show. I mean, it showed in midweek against Karabakh. I mean, as Terry said on the last episode, I mean, you would expect Bayer just to go there and win. And obviously, Xabi Alonso rotated quite a lot for this match.
Yep, I mean, yep. He almost rotated himself to his first loss of the season.
But, he did. You know. And I mean, Florian Wirtz came in, Patrick Schick came in, and, you know, they managed to sort of turn it around. And, you know, they didn't have many minutes left of the match before when they got their 2-2 equalizer. So it was a close affair. But at the end of the day, it is a decent result. Xabi Alonso made the right decisions at halftime. I mean, if you make the wrong decisions at halftime as a coach, you can easily lose 3 or 4-0, which would have spelled the end in that particular knockout competition. So it's kind of strange to see Leverkusen still in all three competitions. I mean, particularly given the history, in a sense. But yeah, I sort of take heart from the fact that Xabi Alonso actually can learn from his mistakes as he goes along mid-match and rectify them. And find the right words and find the right moves to correct them. And if anything, I mean, that really bodes well for the rest of the Bundesliga campaign. I mean, they're still 10 points ahead of Bayern. Really starting to look more and more like it's done and dusted.
Yep. Let's zip our lips. Mm-hmm. No more talking about that. It's just one of those things that We're going to let it happen. Don't jinx it. Let's actually, in fact, move away from Leverkusen. Let's talk about Wolfsburg. Wolfsburg,
yeah.
Whew, one win in their last 11. I don't know what the XG in this game was. I know that at halftime it was something like 0.1 something. Going down to 10 men, of course, doesn't help in that department. But Wolfsburg just seemed toothless. Toothless at the moment.
I mean, they really have struggled a lot. And I'm sort of still thinking, like, every week, why is Niko Kovac still in a job?
Mm.
I mean, I'm not saying that he's a bad coach or anything, but it doesn't really seem to be, like, a really good fit at Wolfsburg over there. He's not really sort of being on the same run like he was at Eintracht Frankfurt. And, I mean, I read an article in Kicker the other day where it said that the reason why Kovac is still in a job is the fact that he stopped rotating players as much as he did at the start of the season. And he's found some stability on the pitch. Well, yes, they are stably losing or drawing each and every match. And they're not playing great football against good oppositions. They're not playing good football against bad opposition. Their last win was against Darmstadt in December. Yeah, why is he still in a job? Do you know why?
No. I don't. And in fact, I think it maybe is just Wolfsburg are taking some of the advice that is constantly spread around within the more eggheady quarters of football, which is, you know, why change your coach unless you know that there is someone out there that is going to do appreciably better? I can't explain it particularly because I think Wolfsburg have been in pretty poor form, as you said, for the better part of 3 months. Never mind the fact that everyone was off for 3 or 4 weeks in there. Yeah, I would not be at all surprised to see him go. But then again, unless Wolfsburg have a good alternative in place, I could also see them standing pat because at this point in the season, we've kind of already addressed it when we were talking about Cologne. I mean, there's a big gap between, you know, fourth from bottom and all the teams who are, you know, likely to go down. I mean, unless Wolfsburg are completely stuck in park for the rest of the season and don't win any more games, they might get caught. But I feel like they're probably insulated at the moment, and there's not a lot of urgency.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, if you take 5 or 6 points from where Wolfsburg currently are, I mean, it's one win and 3 draws from 9 matches. Yes, you're probably going to be all right, and you can sort of sit down at the end of the season and say, well, look, Nico, wasn't really great. You had a lot of money, more money than 2/3 of the league. Look where we've ended up. Doesn't seem to be working. So, you know, find another club that you can coach. We'll be looking elsewhere for other options. So that's sort of a sensible way of thinking about it because, I mean, come to think of it, there's really nothing left to play for Wolfsburg. I mean, they don't look like they are going to be able to get into that fight for that Europa Conference League spot anyway. I mean, they have the players, they have the squad to do it. But yeah, I mean, they're too far behind that anyway. So, I mean, why change a coach and take that risk if you instead sit down now and, you know, make a very informed decision come summer?
Yeah, I would recommend them moving on from Kovac in the summer and probably recommend that they make some pretty significant changes because whatever they've got going right now is, it's not it. It's not it.
No, I mean, and that is probably the sort of luxury that a club like Wolfsburg has. Because if this was, say, HSV, say, Köln, say, Gladbach, and the fans knew that their club was on, you know, spending the sort of money that Wolfsburg are, and they were looking at the results, the pressure would be so high by now, they would have fired Kovac at this point, any of those clubs. But Wolfsburg, I mean, it's basically 3 guys and a dog coming to training sessions to watch the team. And, you know, whenever Wolfsburg are playing matches at home, most of the people are working in the Volkswagen factory anyway and don't bother to show up.
Nick. We all know that Wolfsburg is a different type of club. You know, it's a commercial loss leader thing. But people in Wolfsburg really do like the team. They show up to support the team when they're playing well. They show up to support the team when there's an attractive opponent. It's just not a very big city, and it's a bit sleepy.
Oh, come on. I mean, look at the spectator average. Look at the fact that they actually decreased the size of their stadium without telling anyone.
Oh, I love that. Like that's such a great detail.
Like 3 years. Like, by the way, it says on the match sheet 28,808. But, you know, we've taken away a few seats here and there. It's, you know, around 27,000. But just so you know. No, but I mean, look at other cities of a comparable size and look at the support those teams are getting.
Mm.
It's not the same. It's not the same. And I mean, say what you want about their financial backers. It's sort of like, yes, Volkswagen thinks it's great to have a team playing with their logo on the shirts. And I mean, to be fair, a lot of their fans work for Volkswagen. I mean, a lot of matches, particularly when they were playing in the Europa League and they had like these Thursday night matches, they really crashed with a lot of shift workers' schedules because they couldn't make it.
What are you going to do?
Produce diesel cars that, you know, are environmentally friendly. That's what you're going to do if you work for Volkswagen.
I know. Well, you know, it's all about the electric vehicles and stuff now, man. They're changing. They're turning over a new leaf. Sorry, that's a Nissan, by the way. So it's not what they're about. All right. Well, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about that race for the Europa Conference League and stuff. Okay, here comes part two of Talking Foosball. This is Matt Herman here speaking into this microphone. I'm here with Nick Wildhagen. Let's do talk about the intrigue that's happening there in the area of the table where maybe, just maybe, there is a Europa Conference League place up for grabs. I mean, given what's going on in the DFB Pokal, that seventh place may not mean anything at all, depending on who wins the cup. But I still think that there's a pretty good chance that the 800-pound gorilla left in the cup, which is Leverkusen, might well earn the Bundesliga, that seventh spot in Europe. Hoffenheim, Freiburg, both on 33 points. Augsburg on 32 points. And Werder Bremen, a team, you know, you probably don't care too much about. They're on 30 points. All those teams, I think it's well within their reach to hang on to that seventh place. Augsburg probably have the most wind at their backs at the moment. They've won three straight, including this weekend against Heidenheim, who, you know, of course, if they had won, would have been in that conversation as well. How do you figure things among those teams? I mean, we were kind of talking before the pod started that this is the kind of season where, you know, you just go on a good run at the right time and suddenly everyone's being like, whoo, are they going to get into Europe?
Yeah, it's sort of like a Bundesliga 2 mode. It's sort of like whenever, you know, in the second half part of the season, whenever a team goes on like a 4 or 5 match sort of unbeaten streak, it's sort of like, oh, they might go up. Oh, look, they were in 14th like at the end of the Hinrunde, but now they've won 5 straight and they're almost in third. And I mean, it's great. I mean, having teams, you know, popping back down and back up, and it's really entertaining. And I think it makes for a really great race. I mean, all of these teams obviously have certain weaknesses. I think that Hoffenheim is weak at the back at times. That actually two central defenders were sent off against Frankfurt today.
They are so weak that neither one of their central defenders was able to finish the game.
You know, Freiburg suddenly sort of had a dip in form over the last few weeks, and suddenly they popped back up with a 2-2 draw against Bayern. Really late equalizer there, and that sort of re-energized them seemingly, and then they went on to win in midweek against West Ham, giving them a good result before their trip to London. Augsburg sort of like really went on a good run once Torup came in, and sort of they've not been bad, but a little more uneven in terms of the results that they've produced. But suddenly after that win against Darmstadt, they seem like absolute world beaters, confident side. So it's sort of like a very sort of strange situation that on top of that, we can also talk about Werder Bremen, which I'm really not used to, you know, talk to you about Werder Bremen maybe going to Europe, even though I think it's not likely. But just to be able to think that thought is amazing, given the last few years. So again, Werder Bremen, they had a really, really good run. 7 matches unbeaten, but since, I mean, they had a draw against Darmstadt, they lost to Heidenheim, lost to Hoffenheim, lost to Dortmund now. Yeah, it's sort of like it's come to an end. It's sort of back to reality. And I think that Werder Bremen is maybe probably going to be the first side dropping out of that conversation. But the others, I mean, who knows? It could really be any of them. And Hoffenheim in particular, I mean, before those wins against Dortmund and Bremen, they had sort of like a streak of like winning just 1 in 8 or something like that. So it's really... really no way of telling who will take that 7th spot, and that is great.
Yeah, I don't really trust any of those teams particularly to get consistent results, but then again, they're all capable of finishing there. I mean, I see the gap between those teams, which, you know, 33 points is where Hoffenheim and Freiburg are at the moment, and then there's a 7-point gap between them and Eintracht Frankfurt, which, you know, I think we saw it very starkly today when Frankfurt beat Hoffenheim 3-1. As you mentioned, two men lost for Hoffenheim over the course of that game. But, you know, Frankfurt were very much in the driver's seat, looked like the better side. So that cluster of teams, I don't know. I don't know who's got the edge there. I wonder, just since you probably saw this weekend, Bremen losing 2-1 at home to Dortmund.
Utterly frustrating, yes.
Yeah, it seemed to me that Bremen could have expected a little bit more out of that game.
Yeah.
What was your take on it?
I think Dortmund were really brutally effective in the first half. Werder had a couple of chances there as well. Didn't take them, but I mean, they were just half chances. But Dortmund, Marlon actually, you know, scoring with an overhead kick, even though it was from short distance. I mean, when do you ever see that happening? Well, it turns out you see that happening if you play against Werder Bremen.
Yeah.
And no, I mean, it's sort of like when they're 2-0 down, they get that gift of Dennis Eitekin, who actually is a stickler for rules and was very clear about the fact that if you go in from behind and you step on the Achilles tendon, you have to protect the players. It's a red card. That's what referees have been schooled to do. And you've seen this in the Bundesliga time and time and time again over the last few weeks. I mean, Tielemann for Cologne, and I think there was another player was sent off for the exact same thing just a week prior to Sabitzer getting sent off. So him getting himself into that position, really, he should have known better. And I mean, he didn't really complain all that much. I mean, there was a sort of a half-hearted complaint by him, which, you know, just shows you that he knew that Eitekin's hands were basically tied and he had to send him off. So, great gift for Werder Bremen. And I think that they really took great advantage of it for the first, like, 25, 26 minutes. I mean, they produced chance and chance and chance, and Nimja finally got them that 2-1 goal that, you know, getting them back into that match, into that one goal-striking distance. And then, I mean, the most disappointing thing is that, yes, they had a lot of possession. Yes, they had a lot of time left. They wanted to play it cool and calmly, but what they forgot to do is to produce chances. They stopped producing chances. And for the life of me, I mean, I couldn't see any good reasons for why. I mean, was maybe just the fact that Arnold Werner maybe was a bit too trigger happy, bringing on too many players, which sort of broke up the play a little bit too much. I mean, if you throw in 5 guys, it just might do more bad than good for the team, because they're so many people who have to find their way on the pitch for like a few minutes at least, which sort of makes things a little bit more stop-start maybe. But yeah, at the end of the day, it was really a missed chance against a big team of the league.
Yep. Dortmund, they've got a big game coming up on Wednesday, the return leg against PSV Eindhoven. There was a 1-1 draw in the first leg, so it is quite finely poised. But how confident do you think that they should feel after getting this result against Bremen, which was maybe a little labored, but ultimately probably what they need heading into that game?
You know what? I'm sort of like, I never trust Dortmund on the day to produce the result that we expect of them. Yeah, it's against Peter Bosch. You know, if I was to put money on that game, I probably would play for the goals and not for the Dortmund win.
Well, then I guess we'll leave it right there with Nick's tip. For a tip for your favorite flutter on Wednesday. Okay, that is it for this edition of Talking Foosball. It's lovely to have you on every time, Nick.
Yeah, it's great to be back. And hopefully the next time, Terry DeFellin can tell us a little bit about French pastries and the three of us can, you know, chat some pastry and some foosball then.
If you guys are going to be chatting pastries, I'm out. Because I don't know where you're putting your pastries.
You know, in my mouth.
Oh, good. Very, very good. Very appropriate. Okay, many, many thanks to our producer, Aiden Ranchel. Bis zum nächsten Mal, y'all.